For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is right when, like, the Cardinals have, like, Joe Kelly, Shelby Miller, Carlos Martinez. We went to Little Rock. I mean, the crop of pitchers in that league, when I first got there, I'll tell you what, I'm like, if this is double-A pitching, like, I got no shot. Like, I swear there is a month where that is the absolute thought process.
All right, welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today, we're talking to Tyler Ladendorf, former big league utility man and a second rounder of the Twins in the 08 draft after two monster seasons at Howard Junior College. Talking to Tyler, we got to dive into a few things that we don't often get to on this show: Illinois high school baseball and junior college ball. He talks about his time at JUCO Powered in tiny Big Spring, Texas, and his freshman year as a Yankees draft and follow in the last year that was a rule. We go into his professional career, and while being a second-round pick, he wasn't on the fast track. We talk spending 3 years at AA and the adjustments that Tyler needed to make it to the big leagues. He also talks about his big league time in a rookie year spent mainly as a defensive replacement and how to prepare for that on a day-in, day-out basis, as well as working with Ron Washington before the games, which I gotta tell you is a real treat for anyone who knows anything about Ron Washington. And we also talk about his upcoming career as a hitting fellow with the Cubs. Tyler was a wealth of experience and knowledge. Really enjoyed having him on. Episodes of Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and go check out past interviews. We're over 70 now, and if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Quick programming note, we will likely not have an episode the Tuesday following Christmas, so it will be a 3-week break from this one. Also, make sure you subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. BA is rolling out top 10 lists. And go check out J.J. Cooper's Pride and Joy, the Rule 5 recap. Always great Rule 5 coverage over at BA. And with that, let's talk to Tyler Layden. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he was a second-round pick of the Minnesota Twins in the 08 draft out of Howard College, former big leaguer Tyler Ladendorf. Tyler, thank you so much for joining the show.
I appreciate it. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. Before we get into your career, from amateur ball up to the big leagues, let's talk about the now. I connected with you because I saw you just been hired onto the Cubs staff as they created a role for you, a hitting fellow. Walk me through what does a hitting fellow do? What are you looking to do in the next year?
The description, you know what I mean? I'm still, I guess, kind of trying to figure out exactly what it will entail, but I honestly just am looking forward to getting down there, seeing, you know, people that I've, you know, been around, and obviously meeting, you know, the new faces and whatnot, and just, you know, helping whatever way I can. I think the idea that I won't necessarily be, you know, kind of tied down to one team, and only be able to kind of work with, you know, a group of 12 or 15 hitters, will just allow me to kind of just be out there and be available for coaches, for players, and just, you know, help guys get better.
Awesome. Well, wishing you the best of luck in that. Let's dive back into your story, your career. When did you first realize that you had a chance at the next level, whether that be high school or college or pro ball?
Probably my sophomore year of high school. When I went to Maine West, my sophomore year, we fell a game shy of going to the state tournament. I was only a sophomore at the time, but our team was pretty good. And, you know, at the time, you know, you're happy to be a part of a good team. But looking back, I think being a sophomore leading off on a potential state championship team, probably that I would say that year, the spring of, it would have been 04, what was probably what put me on the map and kind of made me realize, just with different conversations from different people, that it could potentially, you know, kind of come to fruition.
And being that Chicago area high school, Illinois baseball, how many ABs are you getting a year? We talked before we started recording and when we were connecting about, you know, you live in Charlotte now, partly because of the weather. How much baseball are you going to play year in, year out?
I mean, geez, you're really not going to have a chance to practice outside. It's usually kind of a deal where when the snow thaws and the field's dry enough, you're kind of rolling into games. It's going to be cold. Some of them might get cut short because of just darkness. Obviously, we didn't have lights. So a lot of just kind of different challenges. But I think that also helped me just at a young age get kind of just be delicate with how you prepare. You know what I mean? The little things. It was a lot of just in the cage, smaller buildings. Now some of these indoor facilities up there are massive and elite with just the training progression. So it was a little bit tough at times, but I was fortunate to have a good coach in Chris Adante. Looking back, just some of the stuff that he was kind of preaching undoubtedly helped a growth in like that probably 12 to 14, 15 time span that I think that would when you could put kind of the dot on that Friday time period was when it was the development came to where, yeah, no, pro ball was going to be a potential.
Something else you had, and everything I've read about, you had a very dedicated mom who was a softball player. So you grew up on the field. Can you make it to the next level without a dedicated parent like that?
No, I don't think so. Obviously my dad was never in my life. It was always me, my mom, my grandma, but her love for softball, had to have, just kind of instilled something in me at a young age without even realizing it, or her going out of her way to do it. You know what I mean? That's just something that's just observed. Being a father now with two, my daughter's six and my son will be five soon. So it's, looking back, seeing how much they observe, you know what I mean? I can only imagine how much that watching her go about it undoubtedly kind of just put that in me at a young age.
So something else I read about how something she helped you with is you suffered a significant shoulder injury in high school. And that's still the age where you think you're invincible, like nothing can hurt you, whatever. And we hear now, with prospects, we hear guys will have TJ, guys will tear an ACL, stuff that's kind of like, you obviously don't want it to happen, but pretty good recovery rate. You have kind of an idea of what you're looking at. You suffer this pretty dramatic shoulder injury. With suffering that at that age and going through that and getting on the other side of that, I guess, how did that mentally impact you at the time? But do you think that help you as an adult dealing with injuries? Because a lot of guys get to the next level or get to pro ball, and then that's when they get that first nick in the armor.
Yeah, no, just the mental development. It'd probably be tough to put a price tag on it. Before my 16th birthday, I was in a sling, and you're right. Like at the time, Tommy John was still kind of, it wasn't what it is now. I feel like as far as just the recovery rate being so successful and guys, essentially some of them coming back better and stronger. The people and the doctors at the time told me like, hey, like if you were a pitcher, like this undoubtedly probably would have ended your career, before my 16th birthday. So when I tell you I had to relearn how to throw, I had to relearn how to throw. And it was, it's funny, like looking back, it just kind of like I said, made me get that much more delicate, as I said earlier, which is how I was going to start preparing from then on. With everything I did, I was fortunate to be around some good doctors, some good just physical therapists and stuff. A random gym coach, his name's Kirk Disroot, had a shoulder surgery, tore his labrum, and he was this yoked wrestling coach. And I was like, hey, like, I want to know who did yours, and I want to go to those guys. And I did. And I mean, the rest has kind of been history. It probably took me almost till I got down to Howard to really feel like I got back to 100%. I think getting in the warm weather and just being able to get outside and really stretch it out and stuff like that. Cause you got to think that injury and then barely a year post-op, to be outside in the cold playing, like that was not helping anybody my senior year of high school. And, it's funny looking at video of how I used to throw. It was just like the definition of just being tight and short arming it. It changed the mindset, in a lot of different ways. I think all for the better, without a doubt.
With that, you have that injury too during, I guess, that crucial recruiting time to get noticed, time to figure out what you're doing next. You're getting draft attention. You're trying to figure out college. You've got this bum shoulder. How did you go about navigating that? And what brings you down to Big Spring, Texas?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think right after the shoulder surgery, I definitely just kind of let my grades slip. So it was kind of more of a deal where by the time like it was my junior year, I kind of knew I was going to go to a junior college, and there was just a it was random. It was kind of a deal where a pitching coach who's at Howard at the time, hears about me, doesn't even necessarily see me play, just kind of hears about me, and next thing I know, I fly down there to Midland and then go to Big Spring, just because I'm like, yeah, like I would the idea of coming in the warm weather, and I was like, as soon as I got outside, like this isn't like February, so it's really cold back home, and I'm like, no, like this is what I need to be at least practicing in year round.
And you flew from like what, like O'Hare or
Yeah,
something?
O'Hare in February. I got there by.
Into Midland, which is a tiny airport.
No, it was when I tell you it was. I was so enamored with like just like a nice field, a locker room, covered cages. Like, yeah, think where I'm coming from. You know what I mean? Some of these high school facilities now, you know, you're down in San Antonio, Dallas. Like, so, some of these facilities that some of the my teammates are coming from are actually potentially better than what they were coming into. So it was a different dynamic of like not like, hey, we made it, but hey, this is a place that I could see myself for the next 2 years. And honestly, by the end of the visit, I basically, basically said, hey, I'm what they call a verbal commit. I don't know what the kids call it these days. But like, yeah, no, I was like, I think I'm gonna come here. Yeah, no, I ended up going on a visit to Sanjak like 2 weeks later. And it just financially it wasn't honestly gonna work out. Had it been a little bit different of a setup, I potentially would have gone to Sanjak, but I think I wouldn't trade those years in at Howard for anything.
With the 06 draft, you get popped in the 34th round by the Yankees. And back then, I think that was the last year of draft and follow. Does that, what were those conversations like with the Yankees? Was it a serious consideration for you? And then does the draft and follow thing hang over your head all year? Like how, from the player perspective, how does that work out for you? It makes a lot of sense for the teams. They get an extra year to see how you develop in junior college. How does that mentally hang over you?
Yeah, no, the talks definitely got serious. They came with some decent money. And had I not been, had I been a little bit healthier, after the 06 summer season in high school, my senior year, it would have been a little bit different. But the money was undoubtedly respectable. And so that's, it was tough because you got to think about, me, it's just me, my mom, my grandma. And so no, there were undoubtedly some serious conversations, but I knew that I could just go. I knew I needed to go down there and just get a little bit healthier. I knew my arm wasn't where it needed to be to go into pro ball and handle a schedule every day. I knew my shoulder was not ready for that, even after, yeah, my senior year. So yeah, no, it was in the year-round draft, looking back, it was just kind of silly the way it was set up. That's probably the only word to kind of describe it right now. It's I couldn't talk to any other teams, and so I even you're limited because it was just kind of a deal where I kind of knew it wasn't going to happen with the Yankees just based on conversations like leading up to like. Probably in the middle of the season was when I was like, no, like I think I and you gotta think this is also I'm finally kind of getting settled in the Big Spring, so just being comfortable in a good place around really good people was also playing a massive factor. Like, hey, like I have no problem coming back here for my sophomore year, like not no problem. And so, yeah, no, it was but it was weird. Yeah, no, I think they had an. I can only talk to the Yankees organization for up until like 2 weeks before the draft, and then you're trying to squeeze all this in. So it was, yeah, it was kind of just a very weird stretch right after the season. My freshman year down at Howard, it was. I can see the type of situations and dynamics where it would be beneficial, but I feel like. those were fewer and far between, which is, I think, why they ultimately got rid of it.
You played a little bit of short season, like Appy League, some GCL. It's probably where you would have headed out had you signed as a 34th rounder. What, you know, with hindsight being 2020, your, you know, knowledge of your game then, now, how do you think, what do you think you got out of those years at junior college that maybe gave you a little more of a springboard for success than if you had signed at 18? Or, you know, in on the adverse thing, do you think you could have handled that at 18?
I think I could have, just because, you know, I was an only child. And so after, like, the shoulder surgery, it was just, like I said, an immense amount of mental growth. But it's tough to say, because you got to think, where you could have potentially gone. I mean, the A's, their short season team was in Vancouver at the time. Like, I don't know that I would have been able to, you know what I mean? That's a little bit different than going to Elizabethton, which is where I eventually played with the Twins. Like, the setups would be the same, but you're talking a different dynamic of just everything. And so, I think it was easy to get that much more prepared in junior college. And like I said, I was comfortable there. I loved the people I was around. And it was that at the time, that was the highest price tag for me, for sure.
I want to come back to that about where you play, because we don't touch on that enough in this show, like how much the city you're in matters. But with JUCO, you get to Howard. Compare the JUCO grind to the minor league grind. Because I've heard some stories about JUCO and how much baseball you play and how much that sets up a little more for especially the low minors.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're gonna get used to just, you know, staying overnight. I mean, roommates, all that. So just the loss of just kind of a lot of personal space that you will probably have in the amateur, you know, up until you get to professional baseball. You know, I got to experience we weren't eating as good as some of these, you know, minor leaguers eat. The buses weren't as nice. We did have a nice bus at our, you know, our men's basketball team was a national power. So I realized even at that age, like, they were making our lives, you know, help bring money in for the school and making every athlete's lives, you know, just a little bit better. It's comparable, but I feel like even the smallest cities, the lowest levels, which I played at, you know, I played at all of them. And so it's not what the junior college grind is, because you're talking about doubleheaders, a 7 and a 9. The amount of time that you have to get and stay locked in, it'll change your mindset real quick, especially when you go down and come from Chicago, going down to the conference in West Texas that we were in with New Mexico Junior College and a bunch of other schools that top to bottom might not have been loaded, but there were dudes everywhere. There were dudes everywhere. But you know, that was fun for me. That was the first time I got to go out there and on a daily basis, you know, face good competition, even in practice, you know what I mean? Like, we were pretty loaded too, even my freshman year when I got down there. We were just young. And so you could almost put at that point, say at that point was when just the preparation aspect almost got fun for me, because I knew how hard the game was about to be. So it wasn't like I was going out there and taking 150 swings every day, like doing the most. You know what I mean? But like I said, I just got delicate with how I was going to start preparing. You know, obviously the rest was kind of history as far as just the numbers, you know, kind of go. It was getting down there in a warm climate around good baseball players. And like I said, kid from Chicago, that'll change your mindset real quick.
You mentioned you guys being loaded. So for folks not familiar, Howard is in Big Spring, just a tiny town, kind of middle of nowhere, Texas. There's a bunch of them. Your teams were good. Your sophomore, you go 48-8, you know, make a strong showing. The year after you leave, Howard goes 64-1. They're arguably like the best junior college team of all time. Just freakish. How do you build a cult, like a winning type culture? How do you do that in junior college? Because in junior college, you've got 2 years worth of guys, maybe three with some redshirts. There's no seniors. There's no like passing on the tradition in that way. Like, how do you explain what the hell happened at Howard?
I think it starts with good people, starts with really good people. Britt Smith, one of the best human beings of all time. Honestly, he changed my life in a lot of different ways. You got J. Bob Thomas, who is now the head recruiting coordinator at Texas Tech. He's been there for a while. Obviously, they're top 5, 6, 17 in the country every year, loaded. So it started with good people. Jack Giese, the pitching coach. It started with good people and people that wanted to win. And it was easy for me to see that as soon as I got there. And then, it was just kind of a deal where we all bought in. You know what I mean? We were frustrated with how we played as freshmen. A lot of us played as freshmen, so there were some ups and downs. I think everybody felt like they underperformed. Like, that's coming from me. You know, I hit 425 my freshman year. I was 65 of 65 in stolen bases. I wasn't hitting a lot of homers or doubles, but I was getting on base and running when I felt like it, you know? And so for someone, you know, I was hitting leadoff like that, I felt like I kind of helped set the tone. We had a couple other guys that had very respectable years, but were very unsatisfied. And you get a few pretty good players that, you know, kind of keep that feeling throughout the summer and then the winter when we all get back together. And in the fall was kind of a deal where, hey, you know, we're going to go out there and make a name for ourselves. There's too many good players here. There's too many good people. We all want to win and we all want to go to the next level. And it, we started out 20-0, swept New Mexico at home. They were the number one team in the country. And you know, it was kind of a deal where it was all coming to fruition. We just honestly played our two worst games in the regional, you know, and then at that point, you know, it was kind of 2-2. So I think that was all it really was. I felt like we were the best team in the country all year. We were pretty much second or third most of the year. And so, it was just kind of a deal where, J. Bob Thomas, man. I mean, his recruiting classes at Texas Tech right now are through the roof. He was getting guys to go to a place that, like I said, some of those guys were downgrading from their high school facilities. For me, it was a serious upgrade. So, you know, it was a different – he had to spin a little bit different than those guys. But, he knows how to recruit. He knows how to talk to people. He knows how to be personal. I think the rest is history at that point.
With you personally, you're 34th rounder out of high school, 34th rounder again as a freshman in college. Sophomore year, you're getting talk around you as a top rounds guy. That upper level of the draft, the conversations start changing, the numbers go beyond that 150, 200,000 mark. What did you notice about your game that led to that? Did you feel like I am so much better than I was when I was a freshman? Like, what did you see? And then as you're starting to play the draft game, you know, throwing out the number, figuring out where you're going to land, how did those conversations go with you? And how did you find your way to Minnesota at 60? Because a lot of, with the MLB draft, it's got to be a match of number and desire.
Yeah, no, it was, I didn't have a great fall my sophomore year, and I kind of just went home, reset mentally, and came down and was locked in from January to May. I think having signed with Oklahoma, the head coach was Sonny Galloway. I don't want to get off track, but the recruiting coordinator at Oklahoma was Tim Tadlock, who's obviously now the head coach at Texas Tech. Having a very good offer from them, they'd offer me everything but food, you know what I mean? Which position players, you know, generally don't get. And so having the next 2 years paid for, essentially, what was a huge, just, I think, brush of fresh air. I went home, relaxed for, you know, a week or two for Christmas break, and then came down and was just, you know, felt like I was going to go out there and prove something every day. It wouldn't have been till probably the last 2 weeks of the season, honestly, that I realized that, hey, like, we're not, like, talking, like, fourth, fifth round. that was kind of when the conversation changed, honestly. And, you know, it was just, I didn't want to pay attention to it. You know, part of me didn't want to, you know, I just wanted to play and go out there and show what I could do every day, every game. But yeah, no, being around good players too, we had some guys that put up some monster numbers, you know, behind me. So that, I think, you know, is only going to, I think that team was just so well put together that we all just fed off each other. It was silly. Like I said, we just played our two worst games of the season at the very end, and that's. But no, it was just a lot of hard work kind of coming to fruition. A lot of just faith, and just that you've made the right decisions up until now. Like, just kind of go prove it. You know, relax and have fun and enjoy being around, you know, some good people every day. And you know, I think that's the only way you go out there and hit, you know, well over 500. You know, the numbers that I was putting up, that's not you don't write that down on any goal sheet. Like, you know what I mean? That's just a deal where you're just kind of in a good position and you're going out there and not giving away in a bat ever, really. You know, I felt like I was, it's funny. I always try and have over the years, like, what were you telling yourself? And I'm like, man, I don't even remember. Like, I was just kind of having fun. And so it was, it was a 3 or 4 month stretch that was just fun to kind of just be a part of.
With that, talking about those numbers, you had a 542 average through mid-May in that junior college season. I was curious, you and your game as a player, just talking hitting in general, and like, and the clips on YouTube, so big league, upper minors clips, you keep it really simple in the box. Not really a lot of movement, you know, short leg kick, that's really it. Was it always that way? Was that by design earlier? Was that something you developed to keep it simple in the box?
Yeah, no, I felt like it was, I just kind of put a high price tag on just making sure I was going to swing at strikes. I felt like, you know, I've never really been one to strike out a whole bunch. And so obviously the metal bat swing was kind of in effect too. You can kind of move a little bit different, you know, when you have that thing in your hands. But yeah, no, I was just trying, you know, strong enough at a younger age that I didn't need to do a whole lot to hit balls hard. So yeah, no, it was just trying to get it simple. And plus, you know, like I said, coming from the pitching I was facing in high school, like, these dudes were really good to me. You know what I mean? Like, everybody was. And so I'm like, hey, like, the idea of me going out there and doing anything crazy movement wise, like, was kind of out of the question early. So, you know, I know they're a little combination of a couple of different things, but yeah, no, just kind of make sure I was going to see balls.
Twins draft you 60th overall, sign you for $673,000, and you sign and went right back to work paying back your mom and grandma.
Yeah.
Why? That's the one paycheck you really get until you make it to the big leagues. Why go back and do that?
I mean, that was just kind of a deal where, you know, they were the reason, you know, where the fact that was able to kind of come to fruition, you know, obviously, other than myself, you know, they're the only other two. They're the two that were most instrumental in making it, you know, kind of all happen. And, you know, my mom was working two jobs at a younger age. So it was, you know, for me, it was just kind of an easy decision. There wasn't any number I just said, you know, but it was just, yeah, like, hey, there's, you guys deserve this more as much as me. You know what I mean? So, yeah, no, I think that was just how I grew up. Like I said, my dad wasn't in the picture. So no, it was an easy decision, you know, in my mind.
You sign with the Twins. They send you out to the GCL. You said you like warm weather. Well, that's the warmest, the muggiest, the grossest. And for your standards, after coming off a year hitting 540, hit 204 in that nice entrance to pro baseball. What is the longest slump you'd been in before you went to the GCL?
Jeez, it wasn't. I mean, yeah, no, that's funny. That was my first. I feel like my freshman year at junior college at Howard, I feel like there might have been a few stretches, but certainly nothing to that extent. Yeah, no, it was a first, you know, a first handling the wood bat too. So like, yeah, no, it was to say that was a grind every morning, and then to go play at 1 o'clock in Florida Yeah, no, you can imagine where I was at mentally. It was a tough spot, but it wasn't anything, you know. Like I said, I think going back to, you know, the shoulder surgery, it's that kind of time alone, just kind of time to reflect that at least helped me practice a little bit. And you're never fully prepared to go out there and struggle to that, you know, to that extent. But no, I think it undoubtedly helped just everything not completely fall apart, so to say.
At 20 years old, did you have any sense of what your ceiling as a player was? Scouts always put, you know, they're drafting you trying to project what you're going to be, if you're going to be a regular, if you're going to be a utility man, if you're going to be a career backup, things like that. Did you have a sense of your ceiling and your timeline to the big leagues, or, you know, can you think that far ahead?
No, honestly, you're just trying to think. Yeah, no, you're at the time rookie ball. You're thinking like, all right, maybe in like 2 years, I'm gonna be in like high A playing at the nice big league stadium, you know, across the street, or big league spring training stadium. But I mean, yeah, no, it was really just, hey, like, who's kind of a level or two in front of me? What are they doing? You know what I mean? I would just kind of pay attention to other guys and whether they moved up slow or fast. And you're not even talking about my position, but just every position. Like, what are certain guys doing differently that are, you know, moving up quicker? And, you know, like I said, I just at a young age to try to pay attention, and even just to what other guys that were in front of me, what they were doing, you know. But yeah, no, never, especially early, never more than like a level or two ahead, because you kind of see how many guys are in front of you, the landscape, all that. So yeah, no, you're just trying to get better and kind of just handle your own at that point.
With that, you do two levels. Your first full professional season in 09, you do 17 games in the Appy League. You tear it up. You hit 400. You're in low A pretty quickly, and then over, of course, two teams, which we'll get into. But is there a big difference in that jump? Because the numbers say there are, but it also is a small sample size. It's just 50 games in low A versus 17 games in the Appy League. Like, in that first full season, what were there any unexpected challenges that caused you to not, you know, obviously not going to repeat those junior college numbers, but maybe not get up to the standards that you were holding for yourself?
Yeah, no. You know, I got a lot better in extended spring training, before I made that brief appearance in the Appy League. I felt like I had a pretty good spring training. I at the time actually felt like I should have been in Beloit to start the season. When you couple in like my defense, and whatnot. But yeah, no, I just made sure I was gonna go get better in extended spring training. I got so much better. I lost a little bit of weight. And yeah, no, I was, like I said, I knew what was gonna happen. I knew what happened in the Appy League. It was about a month stretch all through May that I'm like, yeah, no, you are right where you need to be. And so yeah, no, I went to the Appy League and tore it up. I just didn't. Yeah, no. I going to Beloit. I wouldn't necessarily even Beloit and Kane County. I wasn't necessarily playing every day when I was in the Midwest League. And then you know, obviously after the trade, getting, you know, trying to just fit in with new guys. I just felt like I wasn't necessarily myself. But yeah, no. There were some good players in that league that year. So, but it wasn't a huge jump competition wise, by any stretch.
What does a trade do to you that early in your career? Kind of like the same thing with injuries. You got hurt before most guys get hurt, and dealing with that, you learn that baseball is a business a lot sooner than a lot of guys who get into pro ball learn that baseball is a business. Getting swapped for Orlando Cabrera, Twins legend.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's weird, because you develop the relationships, you know the names of everybody on your team, like, you know what I mean? That there's relationships that when you're around guys, for even like a month, 2 months, let alone 3, 4, 5, some of them the year before, it was a little bit weird. But you gotta think at the time, like, I'm a 21-year-old in low A, so it's like, it's kind of an honor, honestly. So I was, you know, I was excited, to just feel like a team, you know, was thought that highly of me. But yeah, no, I mean, it was at the time, you know, you're like, hey, the A's are the only team that wear white cleats, so that was cool too. So no, but no, I had known a couple guys. There's actually someone that went to San Jac, that was on the team in Kane County. Another dude from Chicago who I'd played against in high school was on the team in Kane County. So just by kind of luck, there were actually multiple dudes that I like kind of knew and knew at least halfway decently. So that played a big factor in just kind of getting over there and being able to fit in a little bit. But yeah, no, it's weird. Like, you know what I mean? It is weird. And then on top of that, like a week after I get traded, I'm on Kane County and we go play a home and home against Beloit. We played them 8 straight times. I'm like, this is like a spring training game. Like I was just literally like out here. And now I have to play them for like a week and a half straight. It was, yeah, something else, that's for sure.
Well, I want to come back to what we touched on, what you mentioned earlier, that the differences in where you're playing and how much does the city matter? Because you guys in the minor leagues are kind of like hired guns. It's not like the big leagues, you know, let's say you sign a long-term deal in Oakland or wherever, and you get a house there, you live there, whatever. Big leagues, you're kind of, you know, you're there for a little bit. It's even less familiar than college. Like you're staying in an apartment. You're around, you're mostly at the field, things like that. How much does where you play matter? Now you get to play 3 years in Midland, which is kind of close to where you went to college, but how much does the city itself impact how you feel, how much fun you're having at your job? Any like, does it matter that much, or is it just need a ballpark, need a uniform?
Yeah, no, I think a nice stadium plays a big factor. The city, it's kind of a deal where, you know, traffic, getting around, just the, yeah, I think we used to have to pay for, you know, our apartments. So the market, just renting apartments and stuff like that, trying to put that together, played a massive factor with just how enjoyable it was. But yeah, no, I think, yeah, it was kind of a deal where going from Beloit to Kane County, and then just food that's open later when you don't feel like eating, you know, stuff that's at the field. And you gotta think, once I went to Kane County, I was able to just live back in my mom's house for that last month of the season. So I felt like it finished up better than it started in Beloit, in the Midwest League. So I like to think that that kind of played, you know, obviously had a positive effect on it too.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You do mostly you're do mainly 3 years in Double A Midland. For the most part, you spend the next 3 seasons after you have a good year in the Cal League, and then the next 3 years in Double A Midland. Kind of a tougher go in that first year, slowly getting better, slowly getting better. In that time, you kind of realize you're not on the fast track. You know, you're not the guy who's going to be in the big leagues at 22, trying to figure out what's going to take you to Sacramento, and then what's going to take you to Oakland. What are you working on over the course of that? We kind of think of, you know, big leaguers or professional baseball players as the best of the best. What adjustments do you try to make to say, I need this to get me here? Like, where are you taking your game, and what are you working on day in and day out during those 3 years to try to get out of Midland?
Yeah, no, I mean, man, it was just kind of a deal where, without trying to emulate anybody else, whether they be in AAA or the big leagues, like I realized that I could potentially get up, get or at least be looked at as a potential big leaguer if I just kind of made sure that I was putting the bat on the ball. I wasn't hitting the ball in the air. I was getting my foot down early. So strike zone discipline was pretty good, even against some pretty good arms. But I wasn't hitting the ball in the air, and I wasn't hitting many homers. But yeah, I think there were Cliff Pennington, some of the dudes that were in the big leagues at the time with the A's, like they weren't hitting homers. So it was like, all right, that's all right. Like hit some hard line drives, hit a double here or there. Try not to strike out, and you know, be a tough at bat. Be obviously I could bunt and little things like that. And this is also coupling, you know, my defense, which at that point, by the time I got to Double A, it was kind of a deal where I'd set myself apart, you know, defensively, especially at second. And so I was just kind of building off, you know, just the resume that my glove had kind of put out there, and just kind of saying, hey, just do enough at the plate to give yourself a chance. I mean, that you got to think, I get to Double A, and this is right when like the Cardinals have like Joe Kelly, Shelby Miller, Carlos Martinez. I mean, we went to Little Rock. I mean, you're talking about like Matt Schumacher, Garrett Richards, Trevor Reckling, a dude that just pitched in a futures game. I mean, it was the crop of pitchers in that league when I first got there. I'll tell you what, I'm like, if this is double A pitching, like, I got no shot at the big leagues. Like, I swear there is a month where that is the absolute thought process. Like, this cannot be like how double A pitching should be. Like, it should not be this jump. And I, you know, looking back, it would have been easy to just sell yourself. Yeah, no, you ran into a tough stretch right there. That's all. And so, but yeah, no, honestly, I felt overmatched at times my first year in double A. So it was just kind of the deal where, yeah, get the bat on the ball and try and just get in positive counts where you can kind of push the contact point out. But yeah, no, there were not a lot of aggressive swings. Really when I was in Midland at all, even until like my third year there, wouldn't have been, I think I hit 9 homers. It was just foot down early, try and get level, stay level. And you got to think the wind in Midland too, like you can't hit the ball in the air there as a right-handed hitter. Like if you're in Corpus Christi with like the Astros, these dudes have been practicing how to hit the ball in the Crawford boxes since they've been in double A. Like, the wind in Midland though, like it's a deal where it changes. So it's like you're actually like not aiming the ball or trying to, but you're like, all right, like I cannot miss that way, because it's like that is never gonna work. And so no, there were just a lot of factors that obviously I dealt with in a junior college, but just yeah, no, presented serious challenges that not a lot of hitters on other teams could really relate to.
Other serious challenge in the Texas League, and I like talking about this, is the bus rides in the Texas League are like no other. What's the Tyler Ladendorf guide? What's surviving the bus in the Texas League? What are your go-tos?
I mean, you're just like, you got every game on the iPad. Like you're playing everything from like Tetris to like, I mean, like Words with Friends. I mean, you are scratching to just pass the time, clawing. And so it's kind of a deal where, I'll tell you what, Midland has the worst travel in minor leagues, because obviously AAA you're flying, but Midland to go to Frisco, who's in division, you're like 6 hours. So no, mm-hmm. No overnights. So these are all like back to backs, whether we're going there or coming home. And then you go into San Antonio, which is 8, 7.5. And then to go down to Corpus Christi, you're talking about 9, 9.5 hours. And like I said, the days off, because they're in division, like that's what created just days that no other minor league team could relate to. And so no, it's wearing to go play in Midland. It is physically and mentally draining for sure.
What are you doing on a day off in an away town, or even just in general throughout the minor leagues? Like, what do you get to do during a day off?
I mean, hopefully go sit by the pool. A lot of guys at that point, if you haven't had one in a while, like you're just like, man, look at these tan lines. Like, but no, it's feel where, yeah, no, you're just trying to go be cool, relax, get off your feet. Yeah, no, and eat at normal times too. I feel like the baseball schedule, like the portions of meals are like, because of like when your day starts, when it finishes. So like be able to get a good lunch at like a normal hour and then get a good dinner like at a normal hour. Without trying to seem like I'm complaining, like it is actually like a very rewarding just kind of day, so to say.
Well, with that, I mean, you're trying to be an athlete at the peak of your profession. What is your meal schedule like typically on a baseball day, like compared to how a normal person eats? Like what does your diet look like in just a normal game day?
I would say, I mean, you're trying to, because I don't like, I don't operate well. I'm like a full stomach. So, I mean, you're talking about something small before you get to the field. And then, so noonish, try and get something small. And then I'm not really eating until like five, you know, after BP, whether you're home or road. But because of like the time crunch, sometimes like you know, just operating leading up to the game, it's your first big meal isn't until, you know, 10 o'clock, 10:30. In all seriousness, and like I said, everybody's different. So, you know, I mean, I'm not speaking on behalf of everybody, but yeah, as someone that didn't want to be out there moving around on a full stomach, it was definitely smaller portions. just throughout the day. So yeah, no, it's like I said, just being able to be full at any one point other than like 10 or 10:30, like that was, you know, it's rewarding, so to say.
I'm sure. Okay, so you finally make it out of Midland. First long-term stint in AAA. You had a couple call-ups, but first long-term stint in AAA in 2014. Things are going pretty well. You're, you know, career highs in most offensive categories, things like that. When did you get the news that you would be suspended 50 games for a positive marijuana test?
It probably would have been the beginning, probably about middle of May. It would have been a test back in spring training. So the test would have been, probably back in the beginning of March. And found out, the middle of May, and then started serving a suspension the beginning of June.
Forget the missed playing time. What does it do to your mental state? Like, not only organization pissed, whatever that is, this is in the social media era, that flies over. It just gets qualified as drug of abuse. You don't get any details. Could be any number of things if you're a fan reading that on Twitter. Like, what does that do to you for that 50-game stretch?
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a deal where it was embarrassing in the sense of, like, you have to follow the rules. Obviously the rules are different now. It was embarrassing just because, you know, obviously for your parents, you know, your lights, you know, we all share the last name. So, it was just something that there's a lot of guys that probably would have like really potentially like pushed over the edge in the sense of like that you might not play anymore. But I felt like just with the work that I was, you know, putting in while I was suspended, I was going up to the field in Sacramento. And I think at that point you're hoping that just from the trade in 09 up until that point, that the work that, you know, the body of work that I'd kind of laid out, the resume I'd built, you know, was going to outweigh just, you know, a bad decision or two. And so, I didn't really feel a whole lot of ill will from the A's. And I think that actually really helped with just helping me move past it. I felt like they just kind of saw the scenario. And you're like, all right, it is what it is at this point. Just be ready when you come back. It was a deal where I think that undoubtedly played a huge factor in, just being able to, for all of us to kind of quickly move past it.
They go ahead and add you on the 40-man that offseason. So you get to spring training 2014, or 2015, you're on the 40-man for the first time. Do you feel like you're fighting for a big league job? Like, is it different? Does that feel different, that spring training, than the others?
Yeah, no, I mean, that whole winter, there's not many that actually know this, but that spring training, I show up and there's a jersey with the number 22 on it. The A's had actually planned to call me up had I not hurt my hamstring at the end of the season in 14. I would have actually been called up. I kind of thought so, just because after the suspension, I'd come back and done well. But my body.
So you found that out in spring training, or you knew that in September while you were hurt?
Spring training. It was kind of a deal where this already should have happened. Like, you should already be a big leaguer. So like that almost helped me like relax as far as like, hey, like just go remind them why you were like, you should have been in the big leagues in September. Otherwise I don't think in 62 at bats, 60 or 62 at bats in that spring training, I think I hit like 330, 340. I mean, that's not a goal. There was no goal to hit. It was, hey, like be the toughest out in big league camp all year. Like that was really the only goal, you know, try and hit as many balls hard as you can and be the toughest out. And I went up there and obviously put up some numbers that I couldn't even have predicted to. You couple the fact that, they had already kind of planned on calling me up with the spring I'd had. I felt like it had finally all kind of come to fruition. Obviously running out there, hearing your name called on opening day, had my mom and grandma out there. It was kind of leading up to that, so it wasn't a huge surprise based on just the sequence of events. To be able to make the opening day roster in 15.
What does making it to the big leagues do for you financially, just for the remainder of your career? Like, does it change how you could live in the off season, or things about your life, or contracts down the road when you're, you know, when you're jumping from different organizations?
Yeah, no, it does. Without a doubt. What the idea of not having to necessarily work a job in the off season, and just be able to really focus on your body and work out and just get everything right for the season. It's hard to put a price tag on that. At the time after I make my debut, you know, that's when my grandma was diagnosed with cancer. So I was actually trying to help pay for just like some in-home care and stuff like that. It wasn't necessarily looking too bright. And so, you know, I just wanted to be, obviously I couldn't be there with her. So I was trying to help out, you know, which is making sure that she was taken care of. And so obviously, you know, she's, you know, fought through it. She's tough. And so, still with us now. So it's,
Hey, shout out grandma.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I used to tell my friends, are like, where's your dad? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm like, but my grandma's here and she's basically like my dad. And so I honestly used to describe her as that. And so, it was just kind of a deal where, no, without a doubt, obviously helping the people, you know, that help you get there, just in little ways so that they can kind of just enjoy life a little bit more than, you know, they probably had, you know, in the past. So it's, you try and enjoy it, but, you know, help the people around you, just being able to, you know, be a part of it.
How clearly do you remember your first knock?
Oh, never forget it, ever.
Walk me through it.
Oh, so we go out there the first two nights and we put it on Texas. You got to think, Texas is like, this is like, they just coming off, you know, back-to-back World Series. And so it was just kind of a deal where, hey, like, let's just go out there. You know, we kind of got thrown together, that group. I mean, some really good leaders, some good baseball players, some role players. I mean, you got everybody from like Coco Chris, and we had Ike Davis on that team. We had Sam Fold, it was kind of a deal where platooning, didn't play the first two nights, and it was the first lefty. And it was just kind of a deal where it's like, hey, like, if we don't do well tonight, like, people are going to question some of the young bats, like Mark Canha. They're going to question me and Mark Canha. Like, that we were the two rookies that everyone was like, hey, if they can handle their own against left-handed pitching, we'll be all right. And so there was not so much a lot of pressure as so much just a lot of expectation to just go out there and hopefully do well. I don't know if I ever felt more locked in, you know, honestly. I think it was like a 7 or 8, I forget how many foul balls I had, but I just knew that ultimately what pitches I knew he was going to throw at that point, and how he was going to try and get me out. You know, at that point, the scouting report on me, like, wasn't a secret. So I wasn't going to change. You know what I mean? I was just going to make sure I could foul off the pitches I couldn't hit, so to say. And he finally put one out over the plate. And yeah, no, just, it was probably like the fourth or fifth cutter I'd seen. And I think I fouled one off my shin, fouled one like through my legs, hit like two more choppers on the line. And finally, he left the cutter out over the plate. You remember like it was yesterday, honestly. It's, you go numb, you know what I mean? It's, it's stuff that, like I said, you only dream of. I mean, I get to third base. I do like a little clap. I'm pretty. There's just the emotion. And while it's all happening, I have Prince Fielder yelling at me because it's a triple. So like, he's like the cut from, I think, Elvis Andrews. And he's standing right by the pitcher's mound. And he's like, hey, hey, say, hey, throws me the ball. And that's like in the video, you see me catch a ball. And I'm like, thank, like, Ed Prince Fielder, you know, throw me the ball on my first big league hit. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I don't know that I've ever seen that any player throw it to the actual player. Like, normally, obviously, it goes to the dugout, but to have someone that, you know, I'd watched for years, you know, throwing my first big league hit, like, that's the, like I said, that's the kind of stuff that you don't even dream of, honestly.
Yeah, it's a cool video. It's still on, it's on YouTube. You're with the A's for 9 games, and you play 5 defensive spots. What's the comfort level when you're thrown into left field or thrown into center field or whatever? You talked about your defense at second base. When you're going all over the place, does that just comfort carry no matter the spot?
Yeah, because I learned how to prepare. Being able to watch Ben Zobrist, and a dude that was pretty good at, regardless of what position he started at, I would just watch, like, all right, go turn like 4 or 5 double plays from second, like a couple from third, because yeah, you're practicing at the position you're going to play at that day, but knowing that you're going to be the guy that's kind of the jigsaw piece moving around, it's like, we kind of termed it like winning plays. So like, if I'm starting at third, like, the idea that I'm going to go turn a few double plays at short, turn a few double plays at second, make it maybe a few backhands at second, and then just chat. And then even in the outfield, like, that's not so much an issue as just like going out there and standing. Like, you don't necessarily even need to run around as so much just be out there and just see balls, you know, go up, hear sounds, you know what I mean? Just correlating everything. And so, yeah, no, it was, I think being fortunate to be around some good utility guys, and obviously particularly Zobrist, right away, you know, yeah, no, it's tough to put a price tag on that, because no, I think it late in games with the defensive substitution and stuff that I was put into, I think it was, just looking back at some of the plays I was able to make coming off the bench in big situations, I don't think that happens without being able to watch a guy like Ben Zobrist.
On that note, 2015, you deal with injuries for a lot of that year. You don't play a lot of games. 2016, you're up with the A's for 44 games. The line, your big league line, tells an interesting story. You hit 083, obviously not what you'd want to do, but you only get 50 plate appearances in 44 games. If you're starting, you get 50 plate appearances in like 12 games, something like that. If you're trying to hang out, you're trying to hang in the big leagues, getting essentially one late inning AB. Now you're the defensive guy. You can plug in. It's important to make those plays. What does it do to your mental state at the plate where you're like, this is, I get one a game. If I get in, I've got to make this one count. Like, how does that change what you're up there doing as a hitter versus you're in AAA playing every day?
Yeah, no, it's tough. It is tough. It's, because you got to think, that would have been really the first time that I was kind of going through just the time off, and to couple it in with it happening in the big leagues. And like, so it's the time off and now facing just elite arm after elite arm after elite arm. The late inning substitution, some of the bats I was forced to have in late in games, you know, back end arms, I was just trying to be realistic. And I Coco Chris, Yonder Alonso, different guys were like, hey man, like, you know, Josh Reddick took me under his wing. There were a lot of guys that helped me just make sure that I was realistic with the situation some of the situations I was being put in. Like, coming off the bench, whatever lead gets blown, it's like, now you're facing righty righty. It's like, and you have, this is your first at bat coming off the bench, you know? And so there, having some of the conversations with certain guys, was instrumental. For me, it was fun though. Honestly, there was a stretch in June of 16 that I started 2 games like the whole month, and it was against Irvin Santana, who was like 11-1 at the time, went to the All-Star game that year, and the other one was against Lance McCullers, who at the time had the best curveball in the big leagues. Like, that was right when he's like, "Yeah, no, my curveball is the best,"
he's throwing it constantly.
Yeah, and so and it's funny, it's, like I said, a lot of guys would be like, well, man, like, these are the 2 starts I get like all month. But it was like, I kind of knew, it was like, hey, like, you might have to have some tough starts to help some of these starters. Like, you know what I mean? And so honestly, I didn't mind it, because like, you go to the big leagues and you want to do well, but you also go to the big leagues to face like the best players. Like, that, if you're not trying to embrace that level of competition, then like, you should just be in a men's league on Sunday and you can go hit 800 in that. Like, if you're not trying to embrace that level of competition, whether you're succeeding or not, then you got to the big leagues for the wrong reasons, honestly, is what I would tell anyone. And So yeah, no, even just being in some of the tough at bats, like coming off the, we went to Fenway Park and off the bench in blowout games faced Craig Kimbrell and Brandon Barnes. And I had good at bat against Kimbrell, ended up striking out. But Barnes, like with that curveball, I'm like, dude, like, but for me, like, that's fun. Like, I got to face Craig Kimbrell at Fenway. Like, that's not something a lot of people can say. And so it's little things like that, that really just, yeah. You know, you couple that in with conversations with a lot of dudes that have been there and done it for a long time. It was like, no, there was no panic. I felt like at that time, you know, you got Ron Washington in there. I'm out there with early work, you know, at 2 o'clock every day, you know, doing glove drills and stuff. So like I said, it brought up earlier, you know, before the suspension, I had hoped that the preparation, what I was doing to just be prepared, I think at that point was speaking for itself. Cause you're right. My numbers at the time would not have indicated a dude that should have been in the big leagues for as long as I was. So I think, yeah, it was easy for everybody to just see what I was having to, you know, the challenges I was facing, coupled in with just, you know, just the work I was putting in. It was like, hey, no, I like to think it was an easy decision for them to keep me there, even though, yeah, like I said, the numbers would not have necessarily indicated that.
Can you walk me through early work with Ron Washington? Because like every, you know, every now and then during baseball season, there will be a video popping up of him doing fungos before the game with Ozzie Albies or having someone do some sort of drill. Like what? I mean, the man is a wizard. Like what? Is that surreal doing that?
I tell a lot of people, you know, the highlight of my day was it 2 o'clock, 2:30 when there's nobody out there and you're in any one big league ballpark. We're doing early work with Ron Washington. That was the highlight of my day. And this, obviously I didn't play a lot. So you can imagine like that was actually the highlight of my day. So no, it was just seeing a dude that was just out, always wanted to be out there available, ready to go. And was just never trying to overload you at work, but was going to make sure that every day we got at least a little bit better. In whatever, in any one facet. And so, no, I think, like I said, his resume speaks for itself with the defenders that he's worked with and the success that they've had. Yeah, no, because you're talking someone that had already been kind of tabbed well above average defensively. And I feel like he took my defensive skill set to a level that I didn't even actually think was potentially capable, honestly. Just the way he works, the it's no different than hitting, honestly. The way he wants it to just kind of be worded and preached, it's just kind of margin for error and practicing what you're going to get during the games, and just isolating the hands. And so no, it was man, I brought up Fenway the other day. There was a time in 16, we're at Fenway, and like the sides, there's not a lot of grass on the sides. And so they have a massive screen for like the ball boys to shag, because the screen, like they don't want anybody obviously to get hit, you know, as balls are getting thrown in by the bucket. And I forget who he asked. He's like, hey, can we just go out there? And so me and him are in the grass and he always bring a towel, two towels, one for his knees, one for whoever he's working with knees. And his little bucket is three or four gloves. And we're out there like just in the middle of center field, just doing early work. And I mean, it's a moment like that, that you're like, all right, like this is like why you put all that work in at whatever one, you know, junior college, whatever level. It's a moment like this that is honestly better than, you know, hitting a homer or whatever, you know, because there's a lot more people that, you know, have hit homers than being able to do some of the things I've been able to do with really good people. And that's what I'll always cherish.
There's that line in the movie Fever Pitch when she runs on the field at the end to go talk to him. And he's like, the grass, she runs on the field at Fenway. He's like, the grass, is it spongy? Like the grass in Fenway, is it heaven?
Yeah, no, it's in northern grass. It's different in different ballparks, but coming from a dude that grew up in with grass like that, now it's as good as it gets, that's for sure.
So after that 2016 season, you get outrighted off the roster. You know, you start doing kind of the veteran hop into AAA, finding opportunities at the organization, trying to find your way back to the big leagues. 2019, you make the move to Indy Ball. You catch on with High Point. Initially, how did you approach heading to Indy Ball? Was it a bummer? Was it something you were excited about? Because it's farther away from the big leagues, but it's a different style of baseball in that you're playing to win.
Yeah, no, it was because you see the names that had played there in the league, and you saw the way guys were getting picked up. And then you couple that in with in 17, I would have been in Charlotte. That's when we kind of put roots here down with the kids. And so that honestly, when I was going to go play in High Point, it wasn't that big of a bummer because I'm like, hey, like at least like you're 45 minutes from the house and you'll be able to be around the kids like, you know, during the day and stuff while you're at home before you head up to like, there were so many just little benefits that in years prior, like I wasn't. And a lot of it was, yeah, being able to be, you know, be around the kids. And so good people down there at High Point. Also, you know, Jamie Keith, Frank Viola, a lot of good people.
Twins legend Frank Viola, man, the best.
No, a lot of good people there. So no, it was not the bummer that a lot would have thought, especially because I was like, no, like the plan is to not be here by like the All-Star break. That was the plan. Just kind of come here, take care of business, have fun, and a little bit more of a relaxed setting, which I hadn't experienced in a while.
Technically, so, yeah. You weren't there at the All-Star break. You went to the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished in a way.
It was.
Is the on-field different than AAA? Like, how do you view? Because again, yeah, with the Atlantic League, it's you're trying to win a title.
Yeah, no, it's so competition. I'd say you have everybody there knows is at least going to know how to pitch. The velocity of arms is not what you'd see in like AAA, even like AA. The velocity. But then again, these last few years, it's actually gotten better. Obviously, the way free agency going and stuff. But it's so different. You're gonna hit both ends of the spectrum. You might do it in back to back nights. So like you'll have a knuckleball and then a dude throwing like 97. So it's like it's a very, and then you got ballparks, shadows. I mean, there's a ballpark that's got a scoreboard that's out there in center field. Like I mean, it's. There's challenges, but I think the competition, it's like I think because of the way it had been going in that league, it wasn't very deterring in a sense, just because it's like, hey, just kind of come here, take care of business, and you gotta think like for other people it's a little bit different, but like with my defensive resume, it's like I'm in a different boat because there's a lot of different positions that anyone dude on anyone with anyone organization, something happens, it's like I could be getting a call. So yeah, no, it was just kind of come here, enjoy being around the kids and play baseball,
With that, the goal with indie ball, a lot of times get picked back up. You get picked back up by the Cubs in 2021, spend some time in Iowa, you get that final call up to Chicago. It's kind of it's a cool, it's a cool line at the end, one game, one at bat. What is that game? What is just getting back after 5 years? What did that do? How was it different, really?
I mean, in so many ways, it was because I'll tell you what, and you got to think it the way 21 started out, I'm volunteer assistant coaching at Marshall in West Virginia. Actually thinking that and the way it started to go well, it was like I went into that summer thinking, hey, you're going to go play in High Point in North Carolina for like 2 months and then hopefully get put on staff and you'll be done. And so, to go to High Point for one day and then be in Iowa, the season at Marshall ended on a Sunday and I was in AAA in Iowa on that following Saturday. So it was literally a 6-day turnaround from like throwing batting practice to like potentially having to face 98. Yeah, no. And then to be with the Cubs, I had known a few guys on the team just from here and there. So it was easy to kind of get in there and fit in. And it was the first time I was really around guys that were younger than me. So and significantly, it's a young organization. And so just kind of having different conversations, feeling kind of like guys were just kind of gravitating towards me, which is any one conversation. You got to think I'm not even doing well, at the time. And so it wasn't until the end that I started to kind of do well before they call me up. But just feeling like guys wanted to hear what I had to say. And like I said, it was the first time I was really in that dynamic age wise. It was a little bit more enjoyable. A lot of like older guys would be like, no, like I'm not that old or this or that, or like not take guys under their wing or anything. But no, it was fun for me. And I felt like clearly it was, you know, recognized by the coaching staff there in Iowa, in the organization. So it was fun to be around good people. You know, and I think that helped me, you know, get acclimated quick and obviously, you know, start to do well before they had called me up. But yeah, no, thinking that it was never going to happen again. Yeah, I mean, and to do it with the Cubs. I'm the first player to ever wear number 84. There's so many things about it that it's just like as a kid growing up, you know, 30 minutes from Wrigley Field, like you don't, like I said, you don't dream of that stuff. Like it's surreal for sure.
Well, you're going to continue to wear 84 for them, you know, in this role. With that, kind of you played in 2022. You're hanging it up now, going into this new role with coaching. Since you got the college experience, is it just down the road? Is professionally the route you want to stay in, or do you ever see yourself returning to college baseball?
I could see myself. You know what I mean? Especially depending on what, you know, the kids want to pursue, and whatnot. I think there will come a day where, just based on like the professional schedule, and whatnot, if that's something that will hinder me. But no, I want to make sure I keep, you know, my options open. I enjoyed the college. I enjoyed coaching in college. I enjoyed that age group. It's a deal where I think not so much because everybody thinks like regardless of the age, whether they're 14 or 15 or 25 or 26, they're like, you're a big leaguer, but like, oh, you're just better than everybody else. I think the way I had to go about it to get to the big leagues just makes me very relatable and allows me to relate with just about everybody. I do. It was the relationship that I felt like I was able to develop even at Marshall so quickly. It's I haven't found a part of coaching that I like more than the other. So it's like I said, obviously I'm about to, you know, dip my toes in the pro ranks, but yeah, no, it's the stuff that the Cubs are doing. I want to be a part of, and so it's it was just way too good of an opportunity to pass up. And so yeah, no, but to say that I'll never go back to college, I wouldn't be able to say that.
If you could go back and give yourself a pep talk at 20, right after signing with the Twins, what would that pep talk look like?
Oh, that's a good question. It'd have to, you know, it'd have to start with prepare to be ready to play in the big leagues as soon as you can. You know, to kind of sum it up, like I said, I brought up that I was kind of looking at dudes that were a level or two ahead of me when I was like rookie ball, low A, instead of like, hey, what are our big leaguers doing? You know what I mean? And so I think without getting too far ahead of yourself, it would just kind of be like, hey, get ready to feel like you have, whether it's time and space to take a good swing on a 98 mile an hour fastball from any one big leaguer, or be able to handle any one hop from any one hitter that's, you know, spin something at you hard. I think it would have changed. Just it would have never been about the level you're at as so much the expectations, you know, from 2 o'clock to 6:30. Forget what happened to seven, you know, from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock. I think it would have changed just how I would have gone about my business, you know, just preparation wise.
Quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
Yeah,
I have an idea of what this is going to be, but favorite minor league ballpark?
Charlotte.
And that's exactly what I thought it was going to be, considering where you live and then considering the view from that ballpark.
Yep, without a doubt.
Best pitcher you ever faced?
Aroldis, for sure. Oof.
Couldn't pay me to do that. best Charlotte food spot?
If you're late, go Midnight Diner. Yeah, I'd say Midnight Diner.
Best Chicago food spot?
We're going pizza, Gino's East. Otherwise, I mean, I could always go with the Portillo's hot dog. Italian beef. Okay.
Last question, everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues?
You know what? I've never been on a bus that had necessarily broken down. No, I don't. Other than just the trip from Midland to Corpus Christi, we talked about that, having to switch bus drivers, but I don't have any crazy bus stories. Other than my rookie year, Coco Chris always making me get up to the bus in the front of the bus and sing. every day, every road trip.
What's your song of choice? Did he pick that for you, or did you have to pick something?
They picked it sometimes. Sometimes I got to pick it. I was just trying to go like with songs that like I knew. So like I would drop like a Jackson 5 song in there, like just because I knew, you know what I mean? Easy to sing along to, like shorter as well.
Whatever works. Tyler, that is all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.